This is a podcast for Radio Sangam, the number one followed Asian community radio station in the UK.
They're educating parents about, you know, you should be talking to your kid. What are they doing? Why are they doing it?
But Hanif, I get that, Hanif, but isn't there a difference between saying, in a general way, saying your kids shouldn't be out late at night, you should know where your kids are? That's quite generic. And what I'm saying is, if you've got someone who isn't particularly skilled, hasn't particularly got an education, hasn't particularly got a profession or a job, and they're coming home with a 30, 40 grand car and a Rolex, don't you need to be a bit more pointed than, yeah, I want to know where you are at night? Don't you just need to say, look, where did you get that money from? And it's all very well, you know, I understand in our communities, our neighbours and chachis and chachas and uncles and aunties will all have an opinion, and people will talk. But what I'm saying is, what is stopping someone from joining the dots and just sitting these people down and saying, look, where is your money coming from? This is not legitimate. We don't want you going down this path. And if needed, call in the police.
They don't care.
They don't care.
If they cared, you know, at the end of the day, if you're an adult, if you're over 21, 22, surely you know what's right or wrong. Surely. And if you don't, your friends have probably told you that, you know what, you need to get out of this. This isn't good. And they know that. They know that. But and the families that are willing to accept this, they're willing to accept it because it's a better life. It's easier. You know, we have to admit, if you can make $4,000, not get caught, it's far easier than making $1,000. $4,000 a week compared to $4,000 a month. It's far easier.
And if we've got,
I'm not agreeing with it, but.
I really appreciate the honesty, Hanif. I really do. Thank you.
We've got messaging. Somebody saying every generation says our generation wasn't like this. Ye gandagi nahi thi, magar. Don't you think people have lost a lot of respect for their families, themselves, and community they live in? Because all anyone wants to do is part of the in crowd. It doesn't matter what it costs personally. People say it's terrible, teens. Magar, sad to say, teens feel it's a badge of honour going to jail and being rebellious in front of friends to parents. Don't realise you ruin your future. Well, you know, when you're saying parents are asking the question, has it become a badge of honour for their parents?
Yeah. Sorry, you know, Kent, what? The line is really bad.
Is it? Right, okay. So do you think it's a badge of honour for parents saying, you know what, my son spent 3 years in jail and has come out a stronger man?
I think he's gone. I think we lost him. Yeah,
maybe he'll call back.
I really think it's the level of honesty. I'm really pleased with, actually. Is that him? I think he's calling back again.
Right, yeah. Okay. So
I think we've got Hanif back.
Hi, Hanif. Sorry, we lost you there.
Yeah, sorry. What was the question?
I was asking, do some parents out there feel that, you know what, my son's gone to prison and he's come back and he's become a stronger man, better contacts, he'll make more money, and it's a badge of honour for parents as well. Do you think parents are complicit in this? They're not asking the questions. They're certainly not frightened of their kids, are they? Surely not.
Well, there are some parents that are frightened of kids.
Are they? But, are there parents out there frightened of their children?
I'd say so. There's some. I'd say so. Especially those that talk back to their parents, say, you know what, I'll do what I want. I'll move out if I have to. A lot of parents are complicit.
Is it?
It is what it is.
And if you know, when you said a lot of parents are scared of their kids, is it they're scared of kind of retribution, or is it more scared in terms of, you know, this, you know, you, I'm sure you're completely familiar with the idea of baisti and honour, and baisti only if the neighbours find out, if people know our boys moved out and gone somewhere else and he's living with a girl and all this kind of business. Is it that they don't want to make a fuss because it's going to end up in the public space? And by the public space, I mean all the aunties and uncles are going to know. Do you think that is causing a culture of silence?
It is, but, you know, social media has kind of bridged that gap. You just want, you know, if a young man or a young girl are on social media, then, you know, a lot of the youth find out, oh, like, this is what they really like.
Yeah.
So they know anyway, to a certain degree. Parents might not know as much, but, you know, social media and the smartphone has made the world become a small place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of people question it. You know, he's got 30, 40 grand a year car. What does he do? Is he an accountant? Is he an engineer? Is he a sports star? Oh, he doesn't do well. Oh, okay, so that kind of takes you to the frame of thought, like, he's not earning the money the right way.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it is. It's, you know, people are not stupid in the community in Huddersfield. Everyone knows more or less who's legit and who isn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to change. I'm sure it's the same across the country. I was in Birmingham over the weekend, and I met a few people, and I saw a few cars. And when they told me, "Oh, this is my car," and I saw a brand new £30,000 BMW in front of me, I was like, "Okay, not bad for a guy who works 3 days a week." I didn't ask him what he did because I kind of already knew. But
how did
it
you
is
know?
What it is.
How did you know, Hanif?
One, the look; two, the education.
What three, sort of look? You know, if I was walking down the street, what would I look like?
I don't know. I honestly,
I'm a pretty decent looking bloke, you know. So what would I look like?
Chief. I know you are.
So, what's the actual look? So if I was walking down the street and I saw somebody who was walking towards me, how would I know that they actually are somebody who's into violent crime, drugs, whatever? Yeah. How would I know? What is it?
Maybe the look might not have been the right word. Attitude, I would say. Attitude and education and the way they come across. You know, you're talking to them, you just think, okay. And then when you start talking to them and you realize that they're earning more money than you, but you're more educated than them and their ideals and morals are a bit different different compared to yours, then, you know, you can kind of tell. It is what it is. They know what they're doing is wrong, but they're not going to stop it because it's easy money. It really is. It comes down to one, easy money. Every generation has gone through this, regardless of what they say. It doesn't matter. They're all talking rubbish. They're not being honest with themselves. Every generation, it's happened to every generation where they've made easy money, whether that's through drugs, whether that's through the welfare system, whatever system that they've used, they've taken advantage of. To not all of them, but some of them.
I don't know, Niamh. You know, a few people have called in and a few people have texted in and they're talking about easy money. I don't think selling drugs is easy money. I mean, yeah, I'd be frightened for my life. I'd be frightened about retribution. I'd be frightened about being knifed. I'd be frightened about, you know, turf wars. I'd be frightened of going out on a night. I'd be frightened about what's going to happen to my family. Is it really easy money, or is it better just to, you know, work somewhere and just earn a decent living? Is it easy? Are kids not frightened anymore?
I think frightened is the wrong word. I think if you watch some of the movies back in the day, you've got movies like Scarface, there's a certain attraction to it. There is a certain attraction to it.
And you also want
to be someone who's a drug dealer. They say I'm a bad man.
Somebody just texted me and said, Kessa, you're not a bad man. Thank you for that.
but that's what it comes down to, Chief. It really does. It's, you know, the persona, they love that persona. They say, yes, you know, I'm going to, you know, this is things like, I remember I was listening to someone and he said, you know, bro, I run these streets. I'm like, dude, you don't own the street. No, I run these streets. I'm like, what do you mean you run these streets? And they think they're in the Fast and Furious or something. They really think they're on Cloud Nine, or, you know, they actually think they're gangsters. That's what it comes, you know, some of them, not all of them. Some of them are just there purely to make money, but some of them love the attraction of being a bad man.
So it's like they're adopting a particular persona then, I guess.
Yes. Oh, yes. You know, the films, to a certain degree, you know, they kind of highlight that culture. And it is what it is. It's, you know, there's different reasons why they do it. But that's one particular reason. I would look at it and I just think, you know what? I could see why people would be attracted to that.
Okay, we've got about,
you know, about
3 minutes to the news, Hanif. Just a couple of text messages that I want to read out. Somebody says, when you speak out, you get a trashing for insulting their family name. I was slapped for telling someone their daughter was taking drugs. So what do you do? Somebody else says, easy money never pays. There is never a success. It's never successful. They do eventually get caught. What else? haram ka paisa going to zakah and sadqa, shame on people. All right, okay. So, you know, people using money that's not legitimate for legitimate causes, you know, earning money illegitimately and then giving to charity, maybe cleansing their souls, eh? Making themselves feel better. Who knows?
Do people do that, Hanif? Do you, that the people you know, and you know, anecdotally, again, no names mentioned, but do you think that crowd, would they give their money for zakat and sadqah?
I've never heard that is a pretty bad one if they did. I've never come across anything like that. I know where people have set up businesses to, is it money laundering? Is that the right word? You know, where they change dirty money for clean money,
mm-hmm.
things like that. You know, I've heard of stories like that, but I've never, you know what, that's pretty shameful, that.
I can hear the disbelief in your voice. Maybe once it's been laundered, then they pay the zakat out of it. Once it's gone through a legitimate business, and then they pay the zakat.
We're just going to go to another call, final call, and thank you very much for your call. Hello, this is Radio Sangam. Who are we speaking to?
Hi, it's not on air, is it?
It is. Are you okay with that?
No. It
is on air. You know, we'd love to hear you, and I think lots of people would. We've only got a minute left before the news, and I missed the last news. You know, I think your opinions, whatever they are probably worth to listen to for other people
as well.
Okay,
I just basically, it's not an opinion. So basically, I've been listening to your program, and I just wanted to say that I'm part of a local women's group that we set up, Gupshup and Jai, and on Thursday, the 28th, which is this Thursday, we're having, every month we have a different topic that we discuss, and this month we've got, we're discussing drugs and alcohol. We've got Kirkley's Chart coming in, a professional from them, and they're coming in to tell the ladies about how to pick up the signs of our children or anybody doing drugs or alcohol, how we can support them and the services that we can refer them to.
Okay.
I think it's a good... So it's a good platform. So it's just ladies and children are welcome. And it's on top of the hall in Masjid Umar. So the stairs going to the back of the hall upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just we need to be aware that mothers, like I've been listening to your program and mothers say, oh, you know, they do not.
This is Sadgavi Jama, and this is Radio Sangam on 107.9 FM and on DAB Digital in Glasgow, Manchester and Birmingham. Of course, on our app throughout the world, wherever you are, welcome to Radio Sangam. Today's topic and today's guest is Mubeen Azhar, and who was working on the BBC Asian Network, but originally from the hometown of Radio Sangam as well, from Huddersfield. We're talking about the changes in Huddersfield. A lot of people are talking about drugs, violence, crime. Thank you very much for your calls. You know, there's some great, you know, sort of opinions coming through as well. We're on till 12 o'clock midday today. If you've got an opinion on what's happening in Huddersfield, how it's changed over the time, if you've grown up in Huddersfield, if you've got some connections with Huddersfield, do give us a call. We've got Saj Malik on the phone at this moment in time. Let's get Saj on. Hi, Saj, how are you?
Good morning. Interesting show so far. I've enjoyed it.
Right, well, thank you very much. We've got Mubeen on air as well. So what's your opinion? Are you from Huddersfield? Have you grown up in Huddersfield?
I'm from Huddersfield, yes. Good morning, Mubeen. Welcome to Huddersfield. Yeah. Welcome
good
back.
Good morning. Thank you. It's very nice to be back, Saj. Thank you.
Does it seem the same to you still? The landscape hasn't changed much.
No. I mean, there's a lot of it which is exactly the same, and there's a lot of it that's really nice because I keep bumping into people that I know, which is brilliant.
Yeah.
And so I can barely, you know, I can barely go for a walk without seeing someone that I know or someone that I went to school with. All that stuff is really nice. But I would say, I think there's a bit of
a dark cloud.
Yeah, or like a dark underbelly. Do you know what I mean? It's got a bit of an edge to it at the moment. So I think that stuff has been quite odd. But that's one of the reasons I came back, was to understand what is going on and why it's
what going on. What is going on,
exactly.
I think Huddersfield, you know, the Asian community in Huddersfield has been successful, you know, in terms of like education, entrepreneurs, business, people entering sort of professional professions, you know, becoming dentists, doctors, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been late, actually, with the way things have turned recently. And, you know, the Asian community was kind of protected from this sort of drugs and all this negativity for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've jumped on the ship kind of late, to be honest with you. It's sadly as well, though, you know, for sad, it is a bit sad. So in the past, when Asian communities, Asian towns, or towns where there are predominantly decent-sized Asian communities, there have been problems like rioting and that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. I remember maybe 10 years ago, then 20 years ago. And we were kind of protected from that. We never had that. We never had those kind of issues. But recently, there's been a rise in with the drugs, the crime, the violence, and obviously with what's been happening over the last few months. We've been kind of late, to be honest with you.
Do you think there is an actual rise in violence and crime within the Asian community? Or do you think there's just a focus on it? I mean, like, every paedophile's an Asian nowadays, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it's, if we sort of localise, if you look at Huddersfield, just Huddersfield as it is, there has been a rise because we didn't have these levels of violence, gun crime, stabbings, that kind of stuff. We've never had this before. You know, this has just been recent. There may have been, you know, the odd one here, the odd one there, instance of a knife crime or whatever, but shootings on a regular, stabbings on a regular, this has been a spike recently. I personally think it's because of social media, things like apps like Snapchat and YouTube as well, where you've got people, especially in around London, mm-hmm. where the inner cities, you've got a lot of crime. You see a lot of videos, especially like with this drill music that's going on, all this kind of stuff. It seems really glamorous. And whereas before, maybe 10, 15 years ago, you didn't have access to this kind of, to be able to see this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So now with Snapchat, YouTube, you see all of this, and it seems really glamorous. And you see the youngsters, they think it's really cool. It's got the cool factor, and the more violent you are, the more dangerous you are. You know, Saj, the more reputation you've
can
got.
Can I ask you something? This, Kessler, I want to ask you as well. You know, you just made this reference to paedophiles.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things I've found quite depressing since I've been back is if you do a news search, then Huddersfield at the moment is linked to violence and shootings and drugs, and also linked to grooming gangs.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of two big ones. But, you know, neither of which are in any way can be construed as positive or good. Do you think there's an issue with kind of media representation sometimes?
I think absolutely there isn't. There's a disproportionate representation on media with regards to what's going on. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand that actually, if you look at proportionality, there are only so many people from the Asian population within the UK, let's say 2 million, yeah? And then when you look at cases that are coming across from things like Rochdale, Rotherham, Huddersfield, Dewsbury, wherever, and there's these grooming gangs, let's say, that are brought up, it seems disproportionate because I'm sure, sadly, that there are grooming gangs in every community, but you don't hear about
definitely 100%.
You don't hear about it in other communities as much. However, if you say there's 50 million odd people in Britain, 60 million people, and there's 2 million Asians, I find it very, very difficult to believe that such a large proportion of those people would be involved in grooming gangs. I think it's reported disproportionately. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Of course it happens. And I'm not condoning it. It's one of the most heinous, horrendous crimes that there is. And people that do get convicted of it should be punished as harshly as the law, as the law can. However, I think the way that the media is treating it is very different, and it's all about language. You know, if you say the word terrorist now, automatically the next word you think of is Islamic, you know, but terrorism existed, always has done, in mm-hmm. various forms.
I mean, if you look at the way it's reported, it is disproportionate. And what you have to remember is, with grooming gangs, what do they all have in common? The thread in common is that they're all male, they're all men. The problem is with men, not with a particular type of man, or, you know, from a certain race or a creed. But I think the way it's reported is disproportionate. And same with the terrorism and stuff. If you look at numbers, and statistics in the United States, in America, the terrorism is committed by and carried out by white males born in the United States and not Muslim terrorism. And this is the media. I mean, it does it to sell papers, to sell news. It's sensationalized. But it's such a complex and complicated kind of
Sarge, I'm really interested in this. And I think one of the reasons I'm interested is because, you know, I'm back in Huddersfield partly because I'm writing a piece for the Examiner about what's been going on. And I'm also being, whilst I'm doing that, I'm being filmed. So I'm making a documentary. And yeah. I'm in quite a personal capacity. I think I'm in quite a weird place because I'm from this community, Pakistani heritage, Muslim background.
Yeah.
And I absolutely believe we need to talk about these things. At the same time, I don't want for any of this stuff to be used as a stick with which to beat the community again, because I think there's lots of people who are sick of being labeled as, you know, a particular way. You're all a bunch of pedophiles, you're all a bunch of drug dealers. But it's a difficult situation, isn't it? Because we can't at the same time say it's all the media's fault. Because actually, you know, if you look at some hard numbers, if you look at drug dealing, for example, in West Yorkshire, Asians are overrepresented when it comes to convictions.
But I would say, Mubin, to that, you know, I used to be on the West Yorkshire Police Scrutiny Panel, and black people were disproportionately stopped and searched.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
does
that mean every black person, every black person is a criminal?
A criminal.
It doesn't, but what it tells you, if black people are being over, if they're being stopped and searched more than white people, it tells you there's a problem with the police. Yeah?
Yes.
Similarly, if Asians are overrepresented when it comes to convictions for dealing class A's, what does that tell you? It tells you there's a problem with...
But that also tells you that when justice is delivered, it's more harsher on black and ethnic minorities. It's so much harsher. I mean, if you look at we in Huddersfield, we had the Battle of Waterloo. I don't know if you've come across that or heard of that. The Battle of Waterloo basically was a pub in Waterloo on Waterloo Road,
mm-hmm.
where the the Millwall football fans rioted and fought Huddersfield fans, and it was really, really bad. I mean, they absolutely destroyed the pub. The fight, it sprawled out onto the street, the road was blocked off, people were hurt. I mean, it was a nightmare. And the people that were convicted that got a really small and short, really short, light sentences, and, you know, it was just like a tap on the hand, a slap on the hand. Whereas when you've had riots, when you've had ethnic riots, people like in Bradford, people got 5 to 10 years for throwing a stone, you know, and for throwing rocks. So when you look at the when we're sentenced, and when black and Asian people are, when they go to prison, the justice is so different from what white people get. So,
Sajid, I mean, I hear the thing about the riots, but at the same time, and this is anecdotal, you know, I spent quite a bit of time since I've been back in Leeds Crown Court, so I was following particular cases. Now, I found it quite depressing that it seemed that there was I mean, definitely, this isn't just anecdotal. In that period, there was a disproportionate number of Asian names. When you go in and you look at the notice board and you look at what cases are in each court, there was a huge number of Asian names. Now, are you saying that's because the police are going after Asians more than they're going after white people? Or are you saying... I mean, tell me, is that what you believe?
You know, it sounds like a conspiracy, but honestly, there's truth in it. I think when police investigate crimes, you know, I think they're I think more active, and they work harder to convict black and ethnic minority people from black and ethnic minorities. I think they try harder. I don't know. There is institutionalized racism within the police and within the justice system. We all know that. Anyway, after Stephen Lawrence reports and the studies and everything, it's there. It's not a conspiracy. It does exist. But I think I'm not defending it, and it's not something I'm proud of, because, you know, Asian people used to be known and famous for being, you know, the corner shop guy, the guy that, you know, the man that had a business, and, you know, he worked hard, he worked two jobs, and, you know, and then, you know, his kids became dentists and pharmacists. You know, we used to be proud of that kind of stuff, and it's changing, and it's sad. I'm not proud of it at all, but I think these issues and these problems, they're a lot more complicated and complex than we think. They're not just as simple as we've gone wrong, or it's with us, it's our fault. I think they're a lot more complicated than that.
Mm-hmm. We've just had a text message that maybe concurs with you. It says if somebody who's white, a white husband murders his wife, and it's a murder. If it's an Asian person murders his wife, it's an honour killing. If it's an IRA terrorist, it's just a terrorist. If it's somebody who's a Muslim who's a terrorist, then is it an Islamic fundamentalist?
Yeah, I think, So, Mubin, we have a really big problem with integration and all this kind of stuff as well, especially within the Muslim community, as we don't fit in, we don't make an effort to fit in or be part of the bigger society. We're very insular and we keep ourselves blocked in. We have these issues, and these issues aren't going to go away. We are going to have to work on them. And Radio Sangam does a lot, a lot of hard work to do this and to educate people and let the community know about what's going on and everything. So it's not something that's going to change overnight. There is some issue. There is a problem with these grooming gangs. But I think, for us, it's not normal and we see it as a bad thing. We see it as, we wouldn't expect anybody to be a paedophile in our community. Mm-hmm. And then when it turns out we've got gangs, it feels bad. It's like, wow,
Sure, Saj, can I ask you this? Do you think we've got more insular because we're a bit sick of being labelled a particular way? Do you think as there's been headlines about grooming gangs and about terrorists and all that kind of stuff, do you think we've become more inward-looking and more insular?
I think we have. I, when you talk to people, it feels like people have given up, and the kind of things people say is, oh, we'll never be accepted. They'll never accept us as British. We'll always be, whatever racist terms that are used against us. We'll always be one of them. And I think a lot of people have given up. But I think with the younger generation, with sort of, I'd say, the third generation, with them, they either go one extreme or the other. So they either become really integrated, and they have absolutely no links to their roots, their heritage or anything, and become totally British, English, whatever you want to call it, westernized. Or then you have people that feel like they can't integrate, and then they go to the other extreme, so they become really religious, and they withdraw themselves. This is where these kind of people get taken advantage of, and they end up joining the Anjum Chowdhury's, the Al-Muhajirun, Hizb ut-Tahrir, they join these extremists. But the thing is, this happened in the English community as well, with white people as well, so you have the same thing. And when that happens, when people can't find jobs, like in the white working class, mm-hmm. people are struggling to find employment, they join BNP, they join the EDL. But I think I think our problems are highlighted more because newspapers need to sensationalise things to have a story, otherwise, there's no bogey.
Saj, somebody number ending 855 sent us a message and it says, can I say to Mubin, the local newspaper doesn't want to know about the good that the community is doing. We invited the local paper to a community cohesion event on February the 9th in Birkby to showcase all the good we are doing. They didn't bother turning up. We raised nearly £7,000, of which a percentage was going to a local hospice. Did they showcase that? No. When there is a shooting or drug-related, etc. crime, the cameras turn up in minutes. The media is to blame.
That's true. I mean, that's exactly what happened. So, I mean, why would they? Why would they come to a boring event where it shows us, integrating and being with the country? Why would they?
I'm sure people don't organise it.
I'm sure it was a nice event. You know? Yeah.
Why would they come to that? It's boring. No, yeah, but for the examiner,
it might be boring for you. Not for the people that have organised it.
But why would they come to that? I mean, it's of no interest to them. It's not going to sell newspapers. People are interested in that. And even people, just Joe Bloggs is not interested in what good we're doing. They want to sit at home and be flicking through Facebook and whatever on the internet and reading stories where we are bad people, and it just makes them feel better about everything that's going on. So if you look at the bigger picture, like Brexit and unemployment and the hardship austerity measures that the government have put in, all these need to be blamed on somebody or something. If you look back in history in England, I mean, you can go back into time, you can go back thousands of years, but if you go back to maybe around 1500 years ago, there was a lot of Jewish people, there was a lot of Jews in England, and they handled money, and they were made a scapegoat for many reasons. When things went bad, they were there was witch hunts for Jews, and they were killed and tortured, and everything bad that was happening in England was blamed on them. And then further on, if you go down the timeline, when the Fire of London happened, who did they blame? They blamed the immigrants, and the fire actually started in a baker shop, but it was blamed on immigrants. And at that time, the immigrants were the Germans, the Dutch, and some Jews from Europe, and they blamed these people, and these people were lynched in the street. People went into homes, dragged out Germans and Dutch, and lynched them in the street and blamed them for the London fire. And in fact, and when the fire settled and everything was finished, it was these people, the immigrants, the Dutch, the Germans, that rebuilt London and invested their own personal money and wealth.
I'm really interested in what you're saying. I just want to pick up on one point, and with Gessler as well. I think you had one text in, and someone was saying if someone just happens to kill someone in a domestic violence issue, it's not reported as an honour killing, but if it's an Asian person, it is. I just wonder, in that scenario, if you push that to its natural conclusion, do you agree with that? Because I'd say, actually, if someone, in both cases, we'd all agree that it's abhorrent and it needs to be condemned. But in a case where a father or a husband is coming forward and saying it's an issue of baisty and it's an issue of familial honour, then, of course, we should label that an honour killing, because what it tells us is there are issues within our communities. And we know it happens. We know honour killing is a very real thing.
Yes, we do. So we do know. And it's not just killings. People, you know, girls are beaten up and there's violence carried out.
Exactly. So it's a broader point.
In the name of honour.
The point that I'm trying to make is when it comes to drugs and all these things, aren't there scenarios in which we can say, yeah, sure, there might be. Of course, there is a right-wing press. And of course, there are people with an agenda. And of course, there's the EDL and so forth. But, you know, aren't there instances in which we have to say there are cultural aspects that we need to be brave enough to be able to address?
Yeah. See, Mubin, what you have to look at is, As an immigrant community, obviously we're like second and third generation, but our parents' generation, if you go anywhere around the world, immigrant communities always will be two or three generations behind in everything that they do. It will always happen. It will always be like that. And some immigrant communities don't even move forward and, you know, they don't progress. If you look back in the UK in the 80s and 90s, and you can read up about this, you can do research on it, men, white males, for them to beat up girlfriends, wives, was the norm. It was nothing. That's domestic violence as well. Honor killings is similar. I mean, honor killing, taking somebody's life is not the same as just beating somebody up. But they suffered high levels of domestic violence as well, through alcoholism, because of poverty and whatever. And they suffered the same thing, just because ours in the Asian community is for a different reason, because of honour. It's the same thing. Domestic violence is domestic violence. It's just that it's highlighted and pushed forward in a different way. But they've suffered it as well, not just us. And I think it's the same thing.
It might be the same thing. I guess the point that I'm trying to make is, whether it comes to honour killing or grooming gangs or actually drug dealing as well, isn't there an issue there that if there is a cultural aspect, if, for example, someone is saying, I had to and I killed my daughter because she went out with a boy and it was seen as dishonourable, as a community then, don't we actually need to say, oh, we can't just lump it all together. It's not just, yeah, this stuff happens in all communities. Actually, there is a cultural aspect there, and we need to roll up our sleeves and say that aspect in some of our cultures, let's just be honest about it, that needs to be challenged.
I mean, Mubin, there
it does. But the problem is it is a cultural one, but all communities face this problem.
Saj,
of domestic violence.
Saj, there's a text message. It's from a female. It's to Mubin as well. If a girl goes off somewhere, you know, from a marriage, a white man will say she went off with so and so, and if that person is convicted, it's a crime of passion. because they've done something against their wife or ex-wife. And if it's an Asian person, then it's not a crime of passion, it's an honour killing. That's from a female perspective.
It is,
yeah, exactly. Crimes are labelled differently. Crimes are labelled differently according to ethnicity. That's when it becomes unfair. You know, and the problem is men feel they control women's lives, whether it's their daughter, their sister, their mother, whatever it is. They feel that they control their lives. That's the problem, and that's the same problem that English people used to have in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. So. With time, education, I think this will change. And I think honour killings have dropped. We don't have as much as we used to. And hopefully, in the future, you know, it'll be down to zero.
You know, I hear that. The bit that I would say I've got a difference of opinion on is actually it's not just about labelling an honour killing. In those instances, we know, and I think it's kind of willfully not facing up to the truth, we know there are instances in which... there's been a cultural aspect in which, you know, fathers and brothers have said this was dishonourable behaviour. You know, we know when people, you know, have taken their daughters, and these are well-documented cases, people have taken their daughters to Pakistan, for example, and then had them murdered. There is a cultural aspect there, and I don't think we're doing anyone a service if we say, oh, no, it happens in all communities. Because, of course, this stuff happens in all communities, but where there is a cultural aspect... We need to call that out, don't we?
We should be more responsible, and we should accept if there's a problem or an issue, we should accept that there is, and we should work towards eradicating it. I totally agree with you. I think it's just that we face such a tougher time and a harder time, especially with media. It puts us on a defensive, and then the problem that we have, we got addressed, and it takes... You know, it turns, because then we have our focus on being negatively portrayed in the media and all this kind of stuff. And then the problem itself is sort of brushed aside.
Yeah, yeah. It's because that we're kind of busy reacting to feeling like the media's after us. So then we don't concentrate on the problem.
If we believe that it's still happening, yeah, and I think if we turn a blind eye to it, we believe it's not happening. You know, as they say, out of sight, out of mind. Then if it's not, if we're not addressing it, if we're not talking about it, it's not happening. So, you know, we kind of fool ourselves, really, and we should really be addressing these issues and, you know, trying to solve these matters. But I think with the crime situation in Huddersfield, I think, to be honest with you, I think it's going to get worse. I don't think it's going to get any better unless we have a real, some sort of governmental, you know, project or something along those lines or that level to come into Huddersfield and tackle this issue.
Otherwise, I don't
think it's going to change.
Why do you think, what makes you think crime is going to get worse in Huddersfield?
I mean, why would it get better? Because over time, it's become more acceptable. So when changes, even if, whether they're negative, they become acceptable and not normal, they just seem to get worse. So, for example... stabbing somebody was something that happened very rarely, and now it's a common thing, so it's just become the norm. So for one person to stab somebody and somebody to take revenge is nothing, and with gang violence and gang culture, there's a big culture of revenge. So if you've, you know, taken somebody from my gang, that they will respond. And they never end. They just never ever end until an outside power comes in and intervenes.
Yeah, Saj, I really, you know what? I think this morning I've really appreciated everyone's honesty. And I think the thing that sticks out to me from your call is this idea that if we constantly feel that we're on the back foot and we're being attacked by the right and the media, then we're not going to address our problems, we're going to retreat inward. I think that's really worth something. And actually, being back in Huddersfield, that's been my experience. Because, you know, for example, this morning, Gesser is someone that is obviously trusted in the community, and I think we've had a lot of honest conversations. Whereas sometimes, you know, I've been with you know, working on this article and with the crew that I'm working with, so I've got, you know, a camera with me, and if I turn up in across the moor and there's just been a shooting, sometimes people will say, well, why are you concentrating on this? It was an Asian guy, but there's white guys too. You know, it's got nothing to do with us. And I think the conversations we've had today are a lot more honest. So you need to see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think
it's like a balancing act there.
Definitely. I mean, the Huddersfield Asian community has never seen this before. Honestly, it is really, really new. We haven't seen these levels of violence and crime before. I think it's great that BBC has come in and is looking at this and investigating it and wants to talk about it. But I hope it helps us and it doesn't just sort of glamorize us and add to the problem.
Yeah, I see that completely. And I just think, you know, one of the reasons I'm really grateful to be here is because I think we have to have these conversations, and that's the important thing.
I think, you know, if you go around the world, if you look around the world, Indian communities, so I'm talking about the Indian subcontinent, immigrant communities are very, very successful. They do really, really, really well, wherever they are in the world, whether in Australia, in America, any parts of the world, they do really, really well because we have that entrepreneurial spirit. We want to be successful. We love education. We love being professionals. It is a small problem in a small part of our community. We're not all like this. You know, the whole Asian community isn't like this. You know, it's not a reflection of the total. It's not the full picture. It is a small minority that are doing this, and I hope, you know, it can be taken up. But Bobine, if you look at Indian communities in around the world, there are similar problems also. If you look at Canada at the moment, the Indian community, because they've got a big Indian community, as in from Punjab in India, mm-hmm. The Sikh community is facing a similar problem. They're having a big, they've got a really big issues with gang culture, gun crime, drugs. And you don't really see that in the Sikh community around the world. You know, they're very hardworking people. They have their religion close mm-hmm. to them. They're very spiritual people. And they're into business. And you don't really see that. But in Canada, it's a really big problem at the moment. There's been deaths with shootings. And it's at a level that's never been seen before. So they're facing the same problem as well. But I think, when you look at Asian people or Indian people, Indian subcontinent, people from the Indian subcontinent, we go across to Europe and America, whatever, we're coming to West, we're working class people. Mm-hmm. So what happens is, in a community, when you've got working class people, even people that are successful or have become professionals, they don't move out of their areas, and sometimes sort of working class ethics and culture stays with them. So even if they've done well, they've been really successful, they've become millionaires or whatever, mm-hmm. they'll still stay within their community. So I think the children, the kids, they rub shoulders with kids from poorer backgrounds because we tend to stay in the same area. So when you've got kids that come from poor backgrounds and they're into drugs and crime and stuff, they will mix with kids from richer families. Mm-hmm. So you end up having... So in Canada, the problem you've got is with the Indian communities, they've got kids that belong to really, really rich families that are in drugs gangs and they're committing murder and shooting people.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, Saj, that it's a particular issue within the Muslim community? You know, the non-integration, the isolation because of... Every immigrant community, there are pockets of culture because people stick together because they're yeah. you know, afraid or they know each other or it's a support mechanism. But within the Pakistani or the Muslim community, there's things like such as halal food, so the halal butchers has to be nearby. There isn't the issue of, like, for example, alcohol isn't prevalent, so therefore there isn't mm-hmm. the culture of going out to the pub. So really, language isn't an issue because you don't need to learn another language because, you know, your grocery shop is Asian, your butchers mm-hmm. is Asian. You don't have the need or the necessity to learn the language, so therefore you don't really need to integrate. You can survive in an insular society.
Yeah.
Do you feel or think that's a particular issue?
There's, you know, with integration, it's something that I've looked at for a long time and I've followed it. Even my dad he had a big love for integration and how our community works. So I've grown up around it and I think I've got a really good understanding of it. It is very complicated and there are many levels to it. See, when Indians first came over, when Indians Pakistanis first came over to England, they weren't going to stay. They came as labour. They were going to work for a short while and go back. So Britain really wasn't ready to receive immigrants. It didn't really know how to deal with it. You know, people stayed in their own areas, which created ghettos in the cities. But we always thought that we weren't going to stay. But then when we had kids, when we had the first generation, people realised, oh, we are going to stay. So then they moved forward maybe one step, as in they got educated, and that was it. They got schooled and they took up professions. The next generation, the third generation, will see another move. But I think Sikhs and Hindus have progressed and integrated really, really well. And the Muslims haven't. With Muslims, obviously, you've got issues, socializing issues, so things around alcohol and eating halal food and that kind of stuff. So there is that problem. But, you know, why should the onus always be on us? I mean, we do make an effort, but why should it always be on us? To sort of integrate
because it's not we're foreigners. That's why, Saj. That's why.
But we're not foreigners though, because the second and third generation are born here. You know, so they were born here and they're British citizens. They're not economic migrants. They haven't come here.
So do you think there is still a strong opinion out there when people say, you know, you'll have heard our forefathers say, you know, one day we'll get chucked out of this country.
I think people have always believed that, but
you know what, it has happened, hasn't it? You know, the poor West Indian community only very recently worked hard all their lives in Britain, contributed to society, their documents, passports being ripped up, thrown away, and being deported or not being allowed back into the country, and contributed heavily to this country. So do you think some people are justified when they say, you know, one day her Majesty, and you know I love, I'm a real royalist, me. I've got great affection for her Majesty the Queen. But do you think one day, you know, people say, oh, the Queen will chuck you out of this country and say, go back to where you came from, so therefore you need to keep something out there, so that really that doesn't give you the need to integrate into society?
Yeah, there is a level of mistrust, and there is always that in the back of the mind that, you know, one day we can be thrown out because we're not white, we're not native to this country. There's always a chance we can be thrown out. But, I mean, BNP, in their manifesto, they said that if we come into power, if your grandparents are, if it's your grandparents are immigrants, you don't belong here, so you can be repatriated back to your country of origin or your grandparents. But I think it's always possible. I mean, if you look at Europe, I mean, you would never ever have thought that there would be, after World War II, there would be ethnic cleansing or another war in Europe. And if you look at the old Yugoslavia, you know, there was ethnic cleansing and there was a war, and people were killed on the basis of ethnicity and religion. So I think there's always a possibility. You can never ever rule it out. So it's not paranoia. I think, you know, it is possible.
Saj, can I ask you, you know, you referenced our kind of parent generation and the idea that they came over, and you used the phrase economic migrants, and I think we all share that. Most of us, our parents, grandparents were economic migrants. Do you think with the way things are going now, do you think that generation feels somewhat let down? And what I mean by that is, I know my parents and I know that generation, they basically came over to work and they got their heads down and they weren't, you know, rolling around in the street and getting arrested because they were too busy putting food on the table and getting a roof over their heads. They came as workers. So do you think we've kind of lost that ethic, the second, third generation along?
Yeah, maybe we have, because I reckon poverty is probably missed, and or hard times has missed a generation then, because, you know, kids these days, they don't really understand the value of money and how hard, you know, life can be. And maybe that's what it is. They don't appreciate what's going on. They don't realize where their grandparents came from. So the youngsters now, you know, 17, I mean, the kids that are committing these crimes, they're only 16, 17 years old in Huddersfield. Maybe they don't know what their grandparents went through when they came here.
Do you think that the parents have forgotten what it was like for them? I'll give you an example. You know, I remember my parents telling me when they came over from Pakistan, there was 10 people living in a house, usually 10 men, all working shifts with only 5 beds, 5 of them working the night shift, 5 of them working the day shift. However, I overwhelmingly hear people talking about Eastern European migrants saying, oh, look at them, there's 10 of them living in a house. Well, so what? There were 10 of you living in a house, you know, not that long ago. And if you look at statistics, a lot of Asian people, a lot of migrants voted for Brexit because, overwhelmingly, they didn't want people from Eastern Europe coming into Britain. So it's, I've got it, so therefore I don't want you to have it. Have they forgotten what life was like for them? Isn't that a form of integration?
I think stories of hardship have skipped a generation then, maybe because they don't value money as we did. I think the next generation don't see it, and they see themselves as any other person in England. So they don't really understand or appreciate the hard work that our parents and their grandparents have put in. But like I was saying before, you know, when they see all this crime and all this gang culture coming out of London, all the grime, the drill music, all that kind of stuff they see on Snapchat, it's readily available. That's what they look up to, and that's what they think is cool. They don't want to be the next entrepreneur anymore. They don't want to be, you know, the next best way cash and carry guy. They don't want to be, you know, they don't want to do any of that anymore. They want street fame. There's that sort of cool factor around it. You know, I'm the strongest guy on the block. Girls like me. I've got the nicest cars. And plus, you don't have to put that much work in, you know. It seems that easy. I know you were saying earlier on, selling drugs is not very easy. You don't have to go through an interview.
There's no application process. So do you think there's a particular problem with... I'm just going to go for it. Is there a problem with men? Because I think all the conversations we've had today are about men. They're about men drug dealing. You know, we've spoken about mothers and sisters in the capacity of turning a blind eye. But it seems that...
being victims of violence, yeah.
Exactly. But when it comes to dealing and gang membership, what is it about men that means that they're ending up in this situation? You know, is it about identity? Is it about a lack of opportunity? What is it?
I think there is a lot. It is complicated because... So the kids some of them have an identity crisis. They don't know whether they're Pakistani, they don't know whether they're British, they're English, Muslim, what have they, they don't know. And I think they are lost, and then are maybe trying to find something hold on to. And then, you know...
Do they still know that they're men? The traditional role of being a man. Do you think that roles have changed so significantly that his job is anymore, what his role in life is anymore?
Yeah, well, maybe, but you know, it depends what you think being a man is. What do you value? So the man that's got the biggest car, the man that's hardest on the block, the man that's got all the girls that are attracted to him, they love him. He's the man then, isn't he? Do you understand? So that's what they see as being a man. Not the guy that went through college, university, got educated, got a degree, became professional, bought a house, got married, you know, is looking after his family, whatever. Maybe that's not what they value as being a man.
I think that makes sense.
That's brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Saj. We've had a lot of phone calls coming on in the background, so we'll say goodbye.
Yeah, no worries.
But thank you for
great
hearing your opinion.
Thank you, Saj.
Well.
Thanks for sharing.
That was Saj Malik. I know a lot of people have been calling in and have not got through. We're talking this morning. We've got another, about 7 minutes or so of this program left. But if you want to contribute, you've got about 7 minutes to call in. We've got Mubeen here, who grew up in Huddersfield, but now lives and works away, but does come up on a weekend when he needs to see family. But we're talking about how Huddersfield has changed over a period of time, what your opinions are, why things have changed. What do you think are the factors that have brought some element of negativity to Huddersfield from... particularly from the point of view of young people, grooming maybe, knife crime, drugs, what's happening on the streets of Birkby, Crossland Moor, and Waterloo and Fartown, etc., etc. If you've got an opinion on that, I really, really want to hear from a young person, to be honest. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had a lot of people that have called us, texted us, but I feel they're a little bit older. I'd like to hear from a young person. Are you a young person? Have you been a victim of something? Has somebody tried to groom you to get into a gang, or are you proud of what you do? Are you one of these lads that doesn't work hard but drives around in a blacked out tinted nice BMW or Mercedes? I mean, any German car will do, to be honest. You know, mm-hmm. anything expensive with loud music. Is that what you think, or is it something else? You know, or do you think, you know what, it's disproportionate, we're just talking nonsense here, it's the media's fault, they just highlight things that are negative, but they never talk about anything that's positive within the Asian community, and the Asian community is just being tarnished, negatively. What's your opinion? We've got a few minutes left, love to hear from you. Mabeen, what do you think about what you've heard this morning then?
So I've been really pleased and with the kind of level of honesty, and I think there is a real level of engagement. Do you know what I think is interesting, though, is that there's a kind of stark difference in the people that called and the calls we took before we referenced kind of media bias and all that stuff, and the calls we took afterwards. And what that suggests to me is actually, when you really strip it back, most people are on the same page. Most people know that all communities, and our community certainly, has its issues, and there's conversations that need to be had. But we're really uncomfortable. We're really uncomfortable about it being exploited by the far right or by the press or by newspapers with an agenda, for example. And because we're frightened, when we get into that mindset, we think, okay, we can't have this conversation. We don't want to have this conversation because it's just going to add fuel to the fire. And I don't think, in the end, I don't think anyone wins that way.
Do you think there's enough people out there that are qualified to have the conversation? Do they have the experience, the know-how, the linguistic skills?
I mean, I don't know how you work out if someone's qualified or not. I do think there was a reference earlier to conversations in mosques.
Yeah.
My experience of mosques in Huddersfield is generally that conversation hasn't been happening.
Well, I'm just going to go back to that comment that you're referring to. Somebody said, I'm going back because it was a message mm-hmm. that came through, and it was something to do with people cleansing their souls by giving to charity, and it's money that's gained from ill means. But when you speak out about this, you get trashed for it, for insulting families. Haram ka pesa going to zakah and sadaqah, shame on people. Come on, you guys. That's us too, apparently.
Yep.
Come on, you guys. Poor families paying thousands of pounds in mosques on donations on Eid. So they haven't got money to put decent food on the table, yet they've got thousands of pounds to give to charity. Where does this money come mm-hmm. from?
You see, I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? That it's not the first time I've heard those stories. And when I hear those stories, I'm thinking, across the board there are failures. There's failures in those families when the parents aren't saying, where is this money coming from? There's failures from the siblings. And then actually, let's be honest, there's failures. If the mosques are taking that money, there's failures there as well, isn't there? You know, I think it is the duty of all of us to actually be able to interrogate some of this stuff and actually be able to ask uncomfortable questions. You can't just shut your eyes and take a bag of money.
Yeah, but if the mosque roof is leaking... you know,
that's a way of looking at it. Sure,
absolutely. Hey, listen, whoever pays for the church spire is the greatest person in the town, aren't they?
No, I see that. And listen, the thing is, Gesser, I would say that I'm never coming from the perspective where I am saying this is exclusive to the Pakistani community or the Muslim community. Of course it's not. All the stuff we've discussed, drugs, violence, grooming gangs, of course this happens in every race and in every community. All I'm saying is, in the situation of Huddersfield at the moment, where it's really prevalent that our communities have a share in this, they've got a big slice of this ugly cake. Yeah, let's take ownership of that. That's
okay, so you've been going around, you've been doing your research, you've been talking to people. Mm-hmm. Some people have talked to you, some people haven't talked to you, and we're both saying that this is prevalent in the last 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is the trigger to this?
I've got various theories on what the trigger is to this, but I think you can't put it really down to one thing. And I'm only reflecting. This is what the conversations that I've had. So a lot of people have said to me, it's actually to do with lack of support for young people, to do with things like funding. But I think what we heard today, and this is a conversation that's happened again and again, is it's been suggested that a lot of this is to do. I would go as far as calling it like a crisis in masculinity. I'd say there's a lot of young men that aren't entirely sure of what it means to be a man. And this is what...
And that's the point that I was making. The roles of men have changed so significantly, and women for that matter, mm-hmm. have changed so significantly that they're not defined anymore mm-hmm. as to this is your job and role in life. So therefore, you don't really know what to do. You know, a final sort of comment. We've got another 40-odd seconds. Back to the mosque thing. Somebody says, yeah, but the imams say the pesa has become halal because it's gone to a good cause. Maybe, maybe not. He'll have opinions.
I don't think it works like that, does it?
Absolutely not. Last 30 seconds, Mubeen. Well, from me, I want to say thank you very much for coming on.
It's been an interesting
conversation, interested 3 hours or so. And I think a lot of people have appreciated, you know, listening to you as well and your research. So
I really appreciate it. And do you know what? If people have a story to tell, if they want to get in touch, they can call you guys, they can tweet me, whatever they want to do. I'm in Huddersfield for a little while. I'd love to speak to people.
Thank you very much, and good morning from both of us.
Radio Sangam, in association with Harji Jewellers, 68 Hotwood Lane, Halifax.